listening to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Welcome to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail, the weekly radio talk show where we unwrap and reveal the secrets that successful people use, and you can too. Available at successunwrappedradio.com. This podcast is sponsored by GoToMeeting.com. Part of business, we have to go to meetings, but it can be a real waste of time and money. And we know time is money. If you're driving 2 hours for a one-hour meeting or flying to headquarters for a half-day training session, you could be saving time and money by meeting online with GoToMeeting. You can invite people to meet you online. They can see your computer screen on their monitor. You can meet as long as you want, as often as you need, for one flat rate. You can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days with no credit card required by visiting GoToMeeting.com and typing in the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com and type in PODCAST. Try GoToMeeting free today with no credit card needed. My special guest this week is Jason Gracia, author of The Motivated Mind, A Complete Guide to Personal Change, and founder of the Motivation123.com website and its parent company, Vantage Point Motivation Services, Inc. He got involved in the self-development industry at a young age and turned his website into a highly popular destination for success seekers worldwide, welcoming over a million unique visitors within a few years of launch and becoming the number one motivation website on the internet. He has since continued to work on developing new tools and programs that people can use to motivate themselves and achieve greater success. Jason and his website have been featured in local, national, and international media, so here he is to continue that trend on Success Unwrapped. Jason, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
How is your approach to motivation different than the norm?
Well, I think the biggest difference is I believe that everyone is motivated from the beginning, that there's no possibility to get motivated, that every action we take is already motivated, and the difference is direction. So it's what we're motivated to do. And someone who sits on the couch all day and watches TV is just as motivated as someone who goes out and achieves their goals. The only difference is what they're motivated to do. And so that's really what I lay out in the book, is the difference between positive motivation and negative motivation, and how you can shift the direction to drive you in the direction you really want to go.
So what do people really mean when they say they're unmotivated?
What they mean is the direction that they're currently motivated in is not taking them toward their authentic desires. I describe an authentic desire as something that we want to achieve. It's a goal that we want, but that middle section of action isn't taking place. And so we can't get ourselves to do what it takes to get what we want. And so instead we do things that come easy, that are within our comfort zone, or that don't require us to overcome the sacrifice or fear that's needed to get our goals. So when they're unmotivated, they're actually powerfully motivated, but in the opposite direction of where they want to go.
So how do we break out of that comfort zone and that negative motivation and make the switch to positive motivation?
Well, how I explain it is every action is composed of four elements, and they're derivatives of pleasure and pain, which I believe drive all human behavior. And we're all driven to gain pleasure and to avoid pain. But not all pleasure is good and not all pleasure is bad, because the pleasure, say, someone with a goal to improve their health, the pleasure that comes from unhealthy foods, it's a pleasure to be sure, but it's definitely a negative pleasure. It holds people back. And the same is true with pain. The pain that comes with that unhealthy lifestyle is a positive pain. It drives us. So there's actually four elements to every action, and there are the rewards of the action, those are the positives we get, and the avoided pains or regrets of the action. So those two are, they're the incentives that drive us. So for instance, taking the health example a step further, if I want to improve my health, the rewards would be more energy, longevity, vitality, as well as avoiding disease, avoiding illness, and those two drive me. And then on the other side, the flip side, are the two deterrents, and those are the pleasures that we don't want to give up, that are negative, that hold us back, and then the pain of that action. And that's usually the fear that's associated with it. So with that weight loss goal, the sacrifice would be the activities we're attached to, like the unhealthy foods or avoiding exercise and whatnot. And then the fears would be, there's not too much fear with this goal in particular, but there could be fears of maybe trying and failing, because sometimes people would rather not try and say that they can't do it instead of being given proof that they can't. So those four elements are part of every action: the reward, the avoided regrets, the sacrifices, and the fears. And subconsciously, usually, sometimes consciously, we weigh those on a set of scales. And whichever side is stronger, that's where we go. And so if our goal is to lose weight, but those sacrifices and fears of that goal are stronger, then we're going to be negatively motivated. We're going to be motivated to continue with our negative behaviors. And someone who is driven to achieve a goal, on the other hand, when their actions are weighed on the scale, it turns out that the rewards and the regrets are more powerful. And so they're driven toward that. They're positively motivated. And that's pretty much, that determines the direction of people's motivation, whether or not they're driven toward authentic desire.
Okay, so how would someone find that authentic desire and trigger that switch that allows them to be motivated towards what they do want to change and make better in their life?
Right, and that's the most exciting part of the whole process. If you just took the model of motivation that I offer, I think that's still helpful. It shows, it gives people insight into their behavior. And most of the time, when people don't look at it from that perspective, they struggle with why they can't get themselves to do things. And that's where we get the negative self-images and the negative self-talk, where they just think it's them. There's something wrong. Everyone around them, it seems, can do what they want and be what they want and get what they want. But for some reason, they can't. And it's an intangible flaw, they think. But really, it's not. It's just a matter of what they attach, their perceptions of fear and sacrifice, reward and regret. And that in itself, I think, tremendously helps. It changes the entire perspective of change and success from one of just not being a lucky person, not being fortunate, to a tangible, concrete process that's happening within us. And it puts the power back with the people because it's in their hands to shift it, which you brought up with your question. That's the key, is once you find that authentic desire, which it can be, I mean, really, it depends on the person. It's difficult to tell because a lot of times people are influenced by the outside and they think it's a goal for them. And sometimes you can only tell once you start it that's not really something you wanted. So from the beginning, you want to avoid that. You want to try and find goals that begin from within and that aren't pressured. For instance, maybe a couple and one of the partners wants their partner to look, act, feel a certain way. And so to please them, they do it. They try. Usually it doesn't work, though, because it's not authentic. It didn't come from within. And so that's one of the most important keys of authentic desire, is that it begins from within you, a goal that you personally want to achieve and not a goal that you're doing just to please other people. Another one would be that the goal is possible and not like most people believe, where if you're reaching too far, it's just impossible. When I talk about it, I mean more of a physical possibility. So you have to deal with reality and the situation you're in. I believe every goal that's physically possible is possible, but you have to begin with goals that you are capable of achieving. And along with being physically possible, they have to be within your hands. So a goal, for instance, someone with alcoholism, you can want more than anything for that person to change, and that could be one of your goals, but that's not entirely within your hands. It's not even personally in your hands in most cases. The goal must be something that's within your hands to control. And goals to change other people, or goals that rely heavily on the reactions of other people, those are difficult desires to achieve because the desire might be there for you, but the control isn't. And so I would say an authentic desire is one that comes from within and that's physically possible and one that's within your control. And that's a good foundation to start when you set a goal. Those three things are important. But to answer the second part of your question, once that goal's in place, it's kind of like the scales are set up and it's a snapshot. And it shows you, if you're not doing anything, here's why. Because the two elements that drive you, reward and the regrets that you can avoid, they're not as powerful as the sacrifices and fears. And so what you do is you take control of that subconscious process that happens within all humans. You get to manipulate the scale and to create that shift personally. And the way you do that is you build your incentive and you diminish your deterrent. And that can be done in any combination of ways. For instance, you can build the rewards that you already know of. And in most cases, people aren't really even aware of all the rewards there are because one of the main problems people have with setting and achieving goals is generality and a lack of clarity. And they have feelings. They know they want to do this. No one's ever really set them down and said, okay, tell me exactly, step by step, what it is you want and why you want it. And so they don't know all the rewards that are there. If they took the time, they could really expand their list and realize that there's plenty of rewards here that they haven't even considered. So one of the things they can do with that first element of reward is to expand their list. Once it's expanded, they can develop each of the items on that list. For instance, using the health goal. If someone improves their health, they could say that I'll live longer, and they can leave it at that. But if you really think about that, that's enormous in scope. Living longer opens up so many opportunities, especially if they have a family. They can be there for their children, to see their children grow, to see their children experience things that they themselves experienced with their parents, to see their children grow into adults, to have their own children. And that's just one little subsection of longer life. So the second, after expanding your list, is to develop each item on that list. And what you're doing is you're building these rewards, and so they become connected to that goal. And so when that goal comes to mind, if you build and build and build, then you'll start to see these rewards show up more often than your deterrent. You won't think of the fear that comes from with taking action and the things you have to give up, but you'll think of all the rewards that will come. And that brings into mind the third step, and that is connecting. You need to connect these rewards to that goal, so when they come to mind and there's that decision point, those are the first things that come to mind instead of the fear. Because in most cases, people, and a phobia is a good example, people with phobias, when they approach that topic, for instance, snakes or getting into an elevator or heights, as soon as they approach it, immediately fear comes to mind. And so what the third step of connection does is it tries to reverse the trend, and it tries to get the rewards to immediately come to mind. And you do that through writing out, and I'm big on writing things down, but not for the normal reasons. I think a lot of people say to write the goal down or to write the reasons down to make them real. But the reason I have people write things down is to form that connection between their goal and the rewards that will come, to make the connection real. And along with reading it and writing it, you see it. Visualizing those rewards is important to form that connection. And with those three steps, just for the reward, that alone will start to shift the balance, because you're adding, all those things add weight. So if you think of it just like a regular set of scales, you're adding weight, and slowly that balance begins to shift away from deterrence and negative motivation and closer to the tipping point of positive motivation. And you do that with both rewards and the avoided regret. Like I said, most people don't have those ideas fully fleshed out. And so if they sit down and think about what are all the things that could go wrong if I don't do this, that will open up a whole new avenue of regrets that they'll be driven to avoid. And with the health, again, it goes on endlessly. There are so many things that without maintaining good health, you're going to run into countless obstacles and diseases and illness and experiences that you don't want to encounter. But most people don't know about them. They don't give it the thought. So the same thing happens with regret. You expand your list. You think of all the bad things that could happen if you don't do this. You develop that list, and then you connect it. And an important point about this, some people, they ask me if it's intelligent to have so much fear as part of the motivation process, because avoiding regrets is motivation through fear. You're afraid to experience these things, and so you're driven to avoid them. And it's important to think of it like a seatbelt, that most people, when they get in their cars and they click their seatbelt, they're driven to do so, not because they want to be an upstanding citizen, not that they don't, that's part of it, but the bigger part is they're afraid of what could happen if they don't. So it's not fear in that I want to scare everybody into changing, but it's a fear that's, it's a real fear. If you don't wear that seatbelt and you get in a car accident, something could happen that you could have avoided. And so you're driven to wear your seatbelt. It's the same thing with any other goal. There are fears associated with all our actions, positive and negative. And to ignore those positive fears that drive us is to leave out half of the motivation process. And so goals that could easily be achieved are abandoned, because without that fear driving us forward, the rewards in some cases aren't strong enough. And so the balance never shifts, and you're always negatively motivated. So it's not that I want people to focus on the fear in life and to always be oppressed, but it's I want them to take reality and use it to their advantage. And that's what you do with your incentive. That's how you build them. You give them more strength, and you add all those to the incentive side of the scales. But you can also diminish the other side, the sacrifices and the fears. And with sacrifice, it's a little tricky, because sacrifice is really a question. On one hand, it's a question of your desire. Every goal requires you to give something up, either time, energy, money in most cases with a lot of goals, or certain activities that you don't want to give up. And so on one hand, you have to want it. And if you don't want it strongly enough, that sacrifice is going to be just too strong of a deterrent. And sometimes that's the way it has to work out. That's just some goals people don't want badly enough, and there's not much you can do for that. But on the other hand, there's also, you can work that sacrifice. For instance, someone who wants to start a business. In their mind, they might feel the sacrifice is either business or family. I can't be away from my family, so I can't start this business. But there are ways where you can cooperate and where you can give in a little on each, and not to give in on your family, but to give in with the time you commit to each. that's one of the things you can do is cooperate with your sacrifices and give a little on each end. And so you're not abandoning the goal, but you're also not giving up the activities that you just don't want to give up like you shouldn't with your family. You need to spend time. But maybe there's a way you could work it where you could do both, spend time and build your company. Another thing is you replace it. And this comes into play more with goals of change, personal change, as opposed to goals of achievement. The health goal is a great example, so we'll return back to that. With a health goal, say there's food that you just love, but you know it's terrible for you. And I love pizza, personally, and I know I shouldn't love it as much as I do, but that's a food that I can't do without. And so, to be healthy, you need to sacrifice that food. But for a lot of people, sacrificing that food or whatever it is, the negative behavior, is too much. And so what you do is you find a replacement. And a lot of times, people's actions, as you know, they're not the root of it. The cause of it is something entirely different. It's usually an emotional attachment or something to fill a void. And so people use these negative behaviors to fulfill that. And by replacing it, you can replace it with a positive. For instance, if people overeat because they're lonely, then they can attack the cause. And the food is just how it comes about in their life, but it doesn't have to. They can find a positive replacement for that. And so sacrifices, in that case, can be replaced with a positive. And so really it's a two-step process. The first, figuring out what I have to give up and why it's holding me back, and then what I can do to lessen the power of this sacrifice. And that takes care of the third quadrant. And then the fourth and final is fear. Fear is the most powerful and overriding reason for people not achieving their goals. The comfort zone is so tight with most people, and that just drives them. It's too powerful. So the balance never shifts, and there is a way to overcome it. And the first step is, with most of these things in the process, is clarity. People usually have feelings of fear. They don't know exactly where they come from, and if they do, they only know the surface. But it's their heart rate quickens, and their palms get sweaty, and they just have images flash in their mind, and they say, no way, I can't do it. And they turn back. So the first step you need to do with fear is you need to figure out exactly what it is you fear. And in most cases, you find out that it stems from something that isn't even that important or powerful in your life. You've added so much of this emotion and feeling onto an intangible that it takes over. But when you pull all that away, and you shine the light on what it actually is, it's something that can easily be overcome. So the first step you have to do is to add clarity to the picture. You have to find out exactly what it is you fear. Then you have something to work with, and you can't really overcome feelings as much as you can overcome concrete fears. And there are three steps that I talk about in the book for overcoming fears, or at least diminishing, because some fears, for instance, the fear of failure, that's something that's always going to be there because there's always a chance. In the short term, things might not work, so it's not always overcoming the fears. Because all you have to do is diminish them enough where a shift can occur, where your incentives are more powerful than your deterrent. And I talk about three fears in the book, and those are the fear of failure, the fear of follow-through, and the fear of success. And with the fear of failure, I help to explain to people confidence, but through a different viewpoint. Not a big part of my book and my philosophy since the beginning is I'm not a proponent of the motivational, inspirational, or self-help field. In a sense that it's not just rhetoric that can do it. It's not just cliche that can do it. You have to have concrete tools. So I'm a huge proponent of those who offer concrete tools. But just feeling, you can't just say you can do it because you can do it. That doesn't give people anything, because when they're alone and they're away from the motivational speakers and the motivational tapes, they'll question it and they'll say, well, why can I do it? I don't think I can. They were pumped up for the moment. But there's reasons why people should feel they can succeed, and those are the ones that I outline in the book. And it's a concrete, tangible system, not just feel-good, positive thinking. And like I said, I have nothing against those that teach the practical, step-by-step processes, but I think sometimes damage is done when you just tell someone, believe in yourself, but you don't give them any reasons to back it up. Because then it's like a balloon, and they're built up, but then it pops because there's nothing there, nothing substantial that they can actually work from. So as far as the fear of failure, the first thing I do is lay out a plan of why you should feel confident. And so when you confront that fear, you'll have a plan of action that shows you, here is step-by-step why you can achieve it. And then they can back it up, and they can feel, wow, I can really do this. The fear of follow-through, I use that just like I would in, say, sports. One of the examples I use in the book is diving. To go from the high dive, step one might be too much for people, and that's sometimes what people face. There's an action that they have to take, and that's the only thing they focus on, and they're too afraid, and they abandon the goal. But you can go to the lower ones. You can start just by jumping off the edge and slowly moving up to the high tide. And that's one of the main things people need to do with the fear of follow through, the fear of actually doing the actions that are necessary for success. So, for instance, I talk about public speaking. To tell someone to get on the stage and talk to 5,000 people is, in most cases, too much. They won't do it. And that's all they focus on is that final goal. I can't do this. I can't do this. It's too much. But if you ask them just to talk all by yourself in front of a mirror, that's step one in that. Slowly but surely builds their confidence. And then you talk to 5 people, and 10, and then 20, and you move up. And it's simple, which all these ideas are, but they work. And it's usually the simplest ideas that are the most powerful because they're proven. They've been around forever, and this is one of them. To slowly but surely knock away at the fear of following through with practice and preparation. And then the fear of success, which most people don't think about it, but I do think it's a real fear that holds people back subconsciously. Is in most cases, people mirror their surroundings. And to state that you are going to improve your position and change to succeed in that goal, you would be, some would think, you're going to abandon your current group. And that is fearful for a lot of people. They don't want to rock the boat, and they don't want to appear superior. And so they'd rather just maintain the status quo and stick with their group. They're afraid that what success will bring them as far as their group. And there's a way to overcome that, too. And it's a very real fear that people have that they don't always think about. But sometimes people would rather be held back so they belong and they have that need for connection satisfied instead of improving themselves because of what could happen, the backlash.
You can visit Jason's website at motivation123.com. And to get his Motivated Mind ebook, go to successunwrapped.com/motivatedmind. And I hope you've enjoyed the first segment of our interview. But it's not over. There's a full 200% more than what you just heard, where we delve deeper into these success principles. To unwrap the full interview and get lots more tools for success, just sign up to become a Success Unwrapped member on any level you choose at successunwrapped.com/members.
This has been Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Be sure to tune in to the next edition of Success Unwrapped, helping you to unwrap and discover your own potential for success. Until next time, keep unwrapping. I'm Heather Vail. This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network at blueberry.com. That's spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y.com.